This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Liz Pelka. In a flurry of diplomacy across two continents, Presidents Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin have met separately for hours with the leaders of Germany and France, trying to resolve the crisis in Ukraine. Russia has massed thousands of troops at its border with Ukraine. The results, no resolution, but at least no invasion for now. The biggest news Monday, President Biden's vow that Russia's Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline in Europe will be blocked if Russia further invades Ukraine. President Putin objected anew that the U.S. and NATO won't guarantee to keep Ukraine out of the alliance, which he sees as a threat to Russia. The U.S. president, who met with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz at the White House, said Putin just needs to back off Ukraine. Putin and French President Emmanuel Macron met for more than 5 hours in Moscow. At the same time, President Biden and Chancellor Scholz spoke at the White House. Macron and Putin, their disagreements during their lengthy meeting registered, but also emphasized a need for more talks. Putin also signaled his readiness to continue negotiations and denied anew that Russia has any intention of invading Ukraine. He said, quote, "We are categorically against any further NATO expansion eastward because it poses a threat to us." Macron described the talks as substantial, deep, with a focus on conditions that would help de-escalation. President Biden's top science advisor, Dr. Eric Lander, has resigned. This after the White House confirmed that an internal investigation found credible evidence that he mistreated his staff. We have more news on VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. A South African court convicted and jailed twin brothers for terrorism on Monday. This conviction was over plans to attack the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria and join the Islamic State group, according to local media. Tony Lee Thulsi and Brandon Lee Thulsi, both 28 years old, were arrested in South Africa in July 2016 and have been held in custody ever since. The South African brothers pleaded guilty earlier Monday as part of a plea bargain with the prosecution, that according to local media as well. While the numbers have been smaller, thousands of protesters continue to snarl traffic and blare their horns in Ottawa, Canada, prompting the mayor to declare a state of emergency. Ottawa Police Chief Peter Slowly said at a briefing on Monday that they have made a number of arrests, have broken up funding, and stopped fuel from getting to vehicles involved in the 10-day protests of COVID restrictions.
We are turning up the heat in every way we possibly can within our operations and enforcement, as well as in our engagement of all three levels of government. Every available Ottawa Police Service officer has been working for the last 4 days.
The police chief also said they have been able to shut down the money being supplied to the demonstrators. Residents of Ottawa are furious at the nonstop blaring of horns, traffic disruption, and harassment, and fear no end is in sight after the police chief has called it a siege that he could not manage. The U.S. Supreme Court has put a lower court ruling on hold that the U.S. southern state of Alabama must draw new congressional districts before the 2022 elections. The decision boosts Republican chances to hold 6 of the state's 7 seats in the House of Representatives. The court's action Monday by a 5-4 vote means the upcoming elections will be conducted under a map drawn by Alabama's Republican-controlled legislature that contains one majority Black district, which is represented by a Black Democrat. That's in a state in which more than a quarter of the population is Black. Frontier Airlines and Spirit Airlines are proposing to merge in a $2.9 billion deal. If it goes through, the combination would create a larger discount airline to compete against the nation's dominant carriers. It would also allow the two airlines to promote lower fares. Both are ultra-low-cost carriers that tempt travelers with rock-bottom prices for no-frills service. The deal is likely to get a close examination from antitrust regulators in the Biden administration, which has signaled a tougher line against big corporate mergers. Via remote, I'm Liz Palka, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, February 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, NATO mulls the long-term diplomatic forces in Eastern Europe to counter Russian aggression.
We are considering more longer-term adjustments to our posture, our presence in the eastern part of the alliance. No final decision has been made on that, but there is a process now going on within NATO.
More U.S. elite forces land in Poland as the administration warns of continuing Russian plans to invade Ukraine.
They've been sending multiple shipments to Ukraine, military support, weapons, and other equipment. And they've been, as you noticed, they've been putting in some more troops over in Europe.
And climate change is killing a plant that produces one of the world's favorite breakfast fixes, coffee. We'll have those stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Amid ongoing tensions with Russia, the Biden administration is warning that more than 100,000 Russian troops along Ukraine's border could still launch an invasion at a moment's notice. VOA's Arasha Rabasadi has more.
In addition to dispatching U.S. troops to NATO allies in Eastern Europe, Washington has sent $650 million in aid to Ukraine, the most ever to that nation, according to the State Department. Ukraine's government has so far downplayed the likelihood of a Russian invasion. Not so, say top U.S. officials. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan added that the United States is still a willing partner in diplomacy should Russia choose a path of de-escalation. The crisis along Ukraine's border is helping forge a rare moment of political unity in Washington as members from both major parties decry a possible invasion. Ukrainians, meanwhile, poured into the streets Saturday in a show of strength, vowing to defend their homeland. In Chernobyl, just 10 kilometers from Belarus, the Ukrainian National Guard carries out live fire training. Diplomacy among NATO members and Russia has yet to defuse the crisis. A key sticking point is Russia's demand that Ukraine never be admitted into NATO, a non-starter for the United States. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
U.S. officials have confirmed that Russia has assembled at least 70% of the military firepower it likely intends to have in place by mid-month to allow President Vladimir Putin to launch a full-scale invasion. Meanwhile, elite U.S. troops and equipment are deploying in southeastern Poland near the border with Ukraine. The troops are part of a mobilization ordered by Biden to show the U.S. commitment to eastern flank NATO allies. For an assessment of the deployment of more American troops into Europe, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bond.
They've been sending multiple shipments to Ukraine, military support, weapons, and other equipment. And they've been, as you noticed, they've been putting in some more troops over in Europe. Those service members that you were talking about, the 82nd Airborne Division, they are arriving to help in Poland. That's about 2,000 of them that are going into Poland from the 82nd Airborne, and that will add to the 4,000 American troops that are already in Poland. So we're going to have about 6,000 U.S. troops in Poland right now. There's another group that's going to Romania. That we have about 1,000 in Romania right now, and the ones that are coming in are about 1,000 more. So that's doubling their presence there because those are the countries that are closest to the action, so to speak. Those are the countries that are going to be affected most by a potential invasion of Ukraine. And the concerning thing that we've seen is the Pentagon says more and more troops keep coming into Belarus. Now, Russia says that they're coming into Belarus for exercises with the Belarusian counterparts, but they seem to be forming along the border of Ukraine. That's where the officials are telling me that they're being placed. And that's concerning because now, instead of just being on Russia and Ukraine's border to the east of Ukraine, they're also forming at the top, the northern part of Ukraine. And it just looks more and more likely that Russia is going to invade. So the Pentagon feels that it's necessary to prepare for some sort of invasion to help beef up the defenses of their NATO allies, namely countries like Romania or Poland, so Russia cannot try to invade them as well.
Any timeline from the Pentagon as to when all of the forces will be in place?
No, they don't like to give exact timeline. Obviously, that's for security purposes. They don't want enemy or a potential enemy to know exactly when and where their forces are going to be. In fact, I was talking to some Pentagon officials today trying to get the exact numbers of U.S. troops around Europe, and I was given, oh, well, we've got about 80,000 in Europe. And I go, well, I know that, but where are they specifically? And they went through place by place on some. You know, you've got this big amount, 35,000 of our U.S. forces are in Germany. You've got about 12,000 in Italy. And we kept going down and down and down. And when we got to the end, I go, hold on, wait a second. You're leaving out about 14,000 troops. And the officials were telling me, well, that's because those 14,000 troops are rotational forces. And they specifically won't tell you exactly where these rotational forces are, because the whole point of having rotational forces is because they can move anywhere around Europe.
The 82nd Airborne is an elite unit. Is this a routine thing for the Pentagon to deploy an elite force, or this is just an indication that something important is about to happen?
I've covered the Pentagon for many years, and let me tell you, the 82nd Airborne Division, they are very good at extracting people out of messy situations. So let's just think about the last year. Army Major General Christopher Donahue, the guy who's leading these troops in Poland right now, he was in Afghanistan a year ago when Kabul was falling and when they were doing the evacuation, and he was leading the U.S. efforts to get everybody evacuated out of Kabul. So my expectation is that these are in place should the U.S. need help getting Americans out of Ukraine. Because if there's an invasion, U.S. forces don't want to be in Ukraine, because the president has already said they're not going to go to war against Russians in Ukraine. And they've got to secure the American citizens there.
The administration is also working the diplomatic channels. There are all kinds of meetings going on in different parts of the world, especially in Russia, where several leaders are meeting Putin. What are you hearing from the Pentagon?
Well, we know that a lot of different diplomatic pieces are moving right now. We've got here in the United States, President Biden is speaking with the head of Germany. So they're trying to keep coordinated. Some of the top NATO allies are trying to make sure they are in lockstep on any activities and any potential changes from Russia. Meanwhile, you've got French President Emmanuel Macron. He is meeting in Moscow with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He's trying to work that angle to try to curb the threat of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. We don't know how that's going to happen, but we do know, again, France is trying to advocate on behalf of all of NATO. They're trying to be realistic, I think President Macron says, but they're not trying to get unilateral agreements just between France and just between Russia, because they know that anything that happens in Ukraine is going to affect all of the NATO alliance, and France being one of the biggest members and one of the most important members, frankly, because of what they put in with defense, they are going to be a key player here in what happens next. And if Russia decides to invade Ukraine, they're going to be front and center, along with the United States, along with Germany, and along with those allies on the Eastern Front, like I was mentioning before, Poland and Romania. They're all going to be key in how NATO responds.
That's VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington. As tensions escalate amid troops and equipment buildup in Ukraine and Belarus, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance is considering the longer-term deployment of forces in Eastern Europe to counter Russian aggression.
We are considering more longer-term adjustments to our posture, our presence in the eastern part of the alliance. No final decision has been made on that, but there is a process now going on within NATO, also, of course, in close consultation with our military commanders, to adjust our presence in the eastern part of the alliance to further strengthen our deterrence and defense. If Russia really wants less NATO close to the borders, they get the opposite. I reiterate today my invitation to Russia to sit down and to negotiate and talk in good faith. We are ready to discuss a wide range of issues: arms control, disarmament, transparency. And we have conveyed to Russia a document listing all the issues where we think it's possible to find a common ground. We're ready to listen to their concerns, and they should de-escalate and sit down with NATO and NATO allies and find a peaceful political way forward.
That's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. U.S. President Joe Biden says Germany and the United States are in lockstep to address Russian aggression amid the Ukraine crisis. He made his comments on Monday as he hosted German Chancellor Olaf Scholz at the White House. Scholz said Washington and Berlin will take all necessary steps, including fighting against Russian aggression in Ukraine. The German leader is under fire at home and abroad for what is seen as an insufficient leadership in the crisis. Germany's defense minister has announced plans to send up to 350 more troops to Lithuania. President Joe Biden.
State the obvious. Germany is one of America's closest allies. We're working in lockstep to further deter Russian aggression in Europe and to address the challenges posed by China and to promote stability in the Western Balkans. We have to take on the pandemic, climate change, and among many other issues. So we have a lot to talk about.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. French President Emmanuel Macron, the top Western leader to visit Moscow since Russia began massing troops on the border with Ukraine, met Monday in the Kremlin for talks with Vladimir Putin. Macron said his aim is to avoid war and build trust. He told the Russian president he is seeking, quote, a useful response that, in his words, would allow us to avoid war and to build bricks of trust, unquote, stability, visibility. Putin, for his part, said Russia and France shared, quote, a common concern about what is happening in the security sphere in Europe, unquote. In eastern Ukraine, tensions over the threat of a Russian invasion continue to rise. However, in the eastern city of Avdiivka, along the front lines facing Kremlin-backed separatists, the war has never ceased since 2014. For VOA, Ricardo Marquina traveled there and has this report narrated by Elizabeth Chenev.
Ukrainian soldiers lead us through the maze of trenches. Here, the Ukrainian troops have become stronger after years of battle against the separatists, supported and armed by Moscow. Barely 50 meters away, the enemy is also watching us. As the soldiers who serve here see it, the war is against Russia, and the very survival of Ukraine is at stake. Alexei, a Ukrainian soldier who withheld his surname, says he is ready to respond to any attack and is in no mood to surrender himself or his territory.
There's been talk of a possible invasion for a long time. We are in our land. We do not intend to leave it.
Despite the almost daily exchange of fire on this line of contact, Ukrainian forces consider the situation under control. The Russian-backed rebels have not gained territory, and the war could be described as low intensity for the last few years. But Alexander, another soldier, says he is aware that could shift dramatically at any moment.
The situation is stable. It is under control. If the enemy begins an escalation of the conflict, we will be ready for any change in the scenario.
This position is in the town of Avdiivka, which endured heavy fighting during the early days of the war 8 years ago. Now the population lives in fear of an escalation. This is the city's military supply store, which opened before the war. We spoke with the owner, Natalia, who, like all the residents, asked to withhold her surname. She confesses that she fears a new, full-fledged conflict.
People are nervous, worried, especially because we're in this area. I would not want a new war.
For residents of this town, which still bears the scars of war, the attitudes and emotions these last few weeks have swung between fear and acceptance. Irina says she fears for herself and her family.
We are worried. My parents live here. It's scary.
Others, like Svetlana, another resident, want to think nothing will happen.
If Putin had wanted to attack, he would have already done so.
On the now quiet front line, the men and women of the Ukrainian army wait and watch. From the other side, the war could return at any moment. For Ricardo Marquina in Avdiivka, Ukraine, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
U.S. businesses and Asian Americans are stepping up to help Afghan refugees adjust to life in the U.S. with technology, training, and tools. One resettlement effort that began in a military base in Indiana has spread throughout the United States. VOA's Jessica Stone has the story.
By the time Rupal Tanawala appeared in local news report in September, she had cut her work hours in half to spend 4 months making sure Afghan refugees at the resettlement camp outside Indianapolis had something she did not have when she immigrated to the U.S., technology.
I come from India, where I did not have access to technology. Being an immigrant, I knew what journey it is. Not able to speak English and not able to learn fast enough. Like in the current time, I know you need a laptop to apply for a job, build a resume, look for a house, apply for all the benefits.
This time, the refugees are receiving technology thanks to donations from Amazon, the Asian American Alliance, and the Society for Information Management. An Indianapolis-based infrastructure company called IEA donated hardware and the labor to create a computer lab for the Afghan families at Camp Atterbury. Sona Rahmani, a refugee herself, was teaching children English when the laptops arrived in the classroom.
Not a lot of kids in Afghanistan have laptops or iPads. They don't even know how to use them. That's why when they saw the laptops for the first time, they were really excited. They have joy and they're interested.
Rupal can't forget the face of a 10-year-old girl she calls Salma.
It was her first opportunity to even sit in a classroom and then to learn with a laptop. She was in tears.
Other military bases in the U.S. have replicated Rupel's project at Camp Atterbury.
The majority of them immediately responded, said, here is our non-government organization who is taking charitable donations. We would love for them to work with her so that we can do something similar to what you established there at Camp Atterbury.
In all, 500 used laptops and tablets obtained through Rupel's efforts were distributed across 8 military bases. The program is winding down now and operating at just 3 bases. Rupel's next challenge? Making sure each family among the 54,000 who immigrated transitioned to life in America with that donated technology. After all, she says, many of them gave our troops something they needed in Afghanistan.
If not for this Afghan guest, like, who would have been our interpreter? Who would have supported all the supplies that they needed?
Welcoming the Afghans is personal for Rupel. Her son is a cadet at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. Another chapter in the American story, immigrants raising the next generation to defend and care for their new country. Jessica Stone, VOA News, Washington.
American officials said they are losing patience with China's reluctance to purchase hundreds of billions of dollars worth of U.S. products they pledged to buy as part of a 2020 trade deal. This report is produced by Zachary Goldman of Reuters.
U.S. officials called on Monday for, quote, concrete action from China to make good on promises Beijing made to buy $200 billion worth of U.S. goods. The purchases were supposed to have happened in 2020 and 2021 as part of a so-called Phase One trade deal signed by former President Donald Trump. The officials said Washington was losing patience with Beijing, which had, quote, not shown real signs in recent months that it would close the gap in the two-year purchase commitments that expired at the end of last year. A spokesperson for China's foreign ministry responded on Monday, saying the two sides should work together to resolve conflicts.
The essence of China-U.S. economic and trade relations is achieving mutual benefit and win-win results. And there are no winners from a trade war.
The agreement, signed by former President Trump in January 2020, diffused a nearly three-year trade war between the world's two largest economies. But the U.S. has since repeatedly called on China to deliver on its promises. Here's U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai in October.
These are commitments that China made. There are commitments that our businesses and workers in certain sectors have looked to. We will have to address where this relationship goes from this starting point.
Monday's comments come a day before the U.S. government is due to release full-year trade data that analysts expect to show a significant shortfall in China's pledge to increase purchases of U.S. farm and manufactured goods, energy, and services.
That's Zachary Goldman of Reuters. In other news, the head of the United Nations Food Agency in Madagascar says the cyclone that battered parts of the country over the weekend killed at least 20 people, displaced 50,000 and destroyed crops that were close to being harvested. Cyclone Batsirai slammed into the Indian Ocean island late on Saturday, knocking down houses and electricity lines along the southeastern coastline, until it moved away late on Sunday, leaving some towns and villages partially or totally destroyed. With a population of nearly 30 million, Madagascar had already been dealing with the aftermath of Cyclone Ana, which killed 55 people and displaced 130,000 just 2 weeks earlier. Cyclone Batsirai struck a different part of the island further south, where the population is facing precarious situation in terms of food supplies because of severe drought. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. The death of an Islamic State leader in Syria last week was hailed as a, quote, blow, unquote, to the group. But families in Syria say danger remains both from the militants and from the coalition fighting them. For VOA, Muneb Taim has this report from Idlib, with Heather Murdoch in Istanbul.
When helicopters descended in Idlib, Syria, last week, displaced families in the area were baffled and terrified. The next morning, many approached the scene to see what had happened. American officials say civilians who died in the operation against Islamic State's leader on Thursday were killed when the intended target's suicide vest exploded. The leader was known by several names, including Amir Muhammad Saeed Abdulrahman al-Maula, Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qureshi, and Haji Abdullah. He is blamed for the recent IS prison raid in Syria, which became a 10-day battle leading to the deaths of hundreds of suspected militants and more than 100 guards and prison workers. But officials of the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, who controlled the makeshift prison, warned that an attack like this was imminent even before Haji Abdullah came to power. Northeastern Syria has several facilities holding tens of thousands of men, women, and children who surrendered when IS lost its last bit of territory in 2019. They are from dozens of countries, and all are held without charges. Squalid living conditions are only deepening the already deeply radicalized camps and prisons. SDF officials call the detention centers ticking time bombs. Many locals say the death of the IS leader may do little to mitigate this risk. But in Idlib, the last province in Syria still held by anti-government opposition forces, some observers say the death of the leader is, nonetheless, a boon. But others say that for civilians, the threat of IS has always been outmatched by the threat of international and local forces bombarding the group. Across Syria and Iraq, towns and cities remain in rubble, and it is unknown how many thousands of civilians have been killed by coalition forces fighting Islamic State. Like many displaced families, even more terrifying than the violence is the struggle to survive the extreme poverty brought on by the war. Heather Murdoch for Monib Taim, VOA News, Idlib, Syria.
Millions of people around the world enjoy drinking coffee, but the daily caffeine fix could be under threat because climate change is killing coffee plants. As Henry Ridgewell reports, scientists in London are working with farmers in Africa to find a solution.
Outside the vast glass houses at London's Kew Botanic Gardens, the temperature is below freezing. Inside, the heat and humidity replicate a tropical jungle. Aaron Davis leads Kew's research into coffee.
This is Arabica coffee, our preferred coffee, the one we drink in high streets and at home. It has a superior taste. And this coffee provides us with about 60% of the coffee that we drink globally. The other species over here is Robusta coffee. So this has a slightly larger leaf. This coffee provides us with the other 40% of the world's coffee supply.
The cultivation of Arabica and Robusta coffee beans supports millions of livelihoods across Africa, South America and Asia. But they're under threat because of climate change.
In some cases, yields are dramatically reduced because of increased temperatures or reduced rainfall. But in some cases, as we've seen in Ethiopia, you might get a complete harvest failure and death of the trees.
The solution could be growing deep in the forests of West Africa. There are around 130 species of coffee plant, but not all taste good. In Sierra Leone, Davis and his team identified one candidate growing in the wild, Stenophylla.
And this is extremely heat tolerant and is an interesting species because it matches Arabica in terms of its superb taste.
A further two coffee species also show promise for commercial cultivation in a changing climate, Liberica and Eugeniades.
That has low yields and very small beans, but it has an amazing taste.
Some believe the taste is far superior. At the 2021 World Barista Championships in Milan, Australia's Hugh Kelly won third prize with his Eugeniades espresso. The team at Kew Botanic Gardens is working with farmers in Africa on cultivating the new coffees commercially. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa News. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
This is the voice of America. Washington, ba 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 zip.